Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Today's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other business today. For all your gold and silver needs, call her toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, Thursday, January 11, 2024. But first, let me wish you a happy National Milk Day. When the nation asks, are you wearing a milk mustache today? I'm not. But I was this morning, I might confess. More importantly, hey, it's also National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. January 11th brings attention to a crime that leaves a lasting toll on human life and their families and their communities around the world. Human trafficking is considered a modern form of slavery. This illegal and outrageous act involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain forced labor or sex or both. Traffickers use violence, manipulation, or false promises to lure their victims into trafficking situations. Victims usually experience physical and or psychological abuse. They might also endure sexual abuse, food and sleep deprivation, threats to family members even, and isolation from the outside world. The goal of today then is to bring greater awareness to trafficking. Each year, organizations around the globe provide support to communities, training to volunteers, and educational events and announcements to increase awareness. And we do so happily, too. Hey, let's get to today's market report. First, in the precious metals, gold, silver, fairly unaffected by today's economic announcements with inflation and joblessness and what have you. Gold finishing, well, they're right now in the New York spot market up about $2.90 at $2,028. Silver down about 17 cents at $22.82. Platinum down about $3 at $9.25. And palladium down $10 at $1,014. Per ounce. That all comes on the heels, actually, of a slightly down U.S. dollar index today, down 0.03 points at 102.34. In other commodities, you have domestic oil, West Texas Intermediate, actually up about a buck today at $72.35 a barrel. Natural gas continuing its rise, up another 2.1% today to $3.10 a cubic foot. In the Treasury markets, predictably, 10-year yield, actually all yields down today. Bellwether 10-year yield down 0.04 at, we're going to call it 3.99%. The 2-year still inverted at 4.26. Actually rounds to 4.27. That also down today. In the equities, been a sort of an up and down day. Down all three in major indexes down earlier today as we speak. Looks like the Dow Jones closing up 15 points at 37,711. NASDAQ up about 0.54, fairly flat, we'll call it, 14,970. And the S&P 500 actually down a little over 3 points at 4,780. European index and Asian mixed. It looks as though Asia or European mostly. The FTSE down about 1%. Also the DAX down 1%. Asian indexes in Japan and China and Hong Kong all up to varying degrees. The Nikkei being the highest at about up 1.8%. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll call today's market report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, a wrap. Head straight to the elephant in today's room. The Consumer Price Index increased 0.3% in December, higher than the 0.2% estimate at a time when most economists and Fed policymakers see inflationary pressures easing. On a 12-month basis, the CPI closed 2023 up 3.4%, slightly above economists' expectations of 3.2%. By comparison, the annual CPI gain a year ago, 2022, was 6.4%. So it's down roughly by half again. Still in percentage terms, still 50%, more than 50% above the Fed's 2% target. Excluding the volatile food and energy prices, the so-called core CPI also rose 0.3 for the month and up 3.9% from a year ago. The year-over-year core reading was the lowest actually since May 2021. Now, much of the monthly increase came due to rising shelter costs. The category rose 0.5% for the month and 6.2% for the year, accounting for about 2/3 of the rise in inflation. Fed officials largely say they expect shelter costs to come down during 2024 as renewed leases, commercial leases, and residential reflect lower rents. Food prices. They posted a 0.4% gain after sliding 2.3% in November, as gasoline rose a little bit, but natural gas actually declined. It's turned around early this year. Airline fares also increased 1% in December. Other key areas got motor vehicle insurance bounced another 1.5% higher. Medical care up 0.6, and used vehicle prices, which was a key contributor to the initial inflation surge in 2021, increased another 0.5 of a percent. Now, wages adjusted for inflation, real wages posted a 0.2% gain while rising a fairly modest 0.8% from a year ago that the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported in a separate release today. Fed officials, as we know, are paying particular attention to the services prices. That category is evidence for whether inflation is showing consistent signs of getting back to their 2% goal. Core services, excluding energy, increased over 5%, 5.3% from a year ago. Now, despite today's higher-than-expected inflation report, futures traders continue to see a strong probability that the Fed will start cutting interest rates in March. Rational exuberance continues, ladies and gentlemen, even for the seasoned investors. As of noon today, Eastern Time, the CME Group's Fed Watch tool indicated about a 69% probability of a March reduction of at least 25 basis points, slightly higher than where it stood yesterday. However, the probability also reflects a divide between the market and the Fed about the timing and extent of rate cuts this year. The markets generally are expecting 6 rate cuts this year, which would take the top rate of the range down to 4%, assuming 25% basis point cuts. December Fed projections, however, in their minutes, point to just 3 cuts, and unlikely starting in March. Now, these numbers show that disinflation progress is still slow and unlikely to be a straight line down to 2%. Not my words necessarily, although I agree with the latter part of that statement, but Seema Shaw, who's at Principal Asset Management, said that, and he added, as long as shelter inflation remains stubbornly elevated, the Fed will keep pushing back at the idea of imminent rate cuts. Actually, in recent days, Fed policymakers have avoided committing to easier monetary policy. Yesterday, Melody Butch talked about New York Fed President John Williams saying that inflation clearly has abated from its more than 40-year peak in mid-2022 and is making solid progress. But he gave no clues as to when he thinks rate cuts will be appropriate and insisted that restrictive policy is likely to stay in place for some time. Now, other officials like Fed Governor Michelle Bowman and Dallas Fed President Lori Logan also expressed skepticism, said they wouldn't hesitate to hike should inflation turn higher. Yes, the drama and uncertainty continues. In other economic news, the Labor Department reported this morning that initial jobless claims inched down last week to 202,000. That was below economists' consensus estimate of 210,000 and was the lowest in 3 months. 4-week average of claims, which evens out some of that week-to-week volatility, ticked down ever so slightly, I think by about 250, in fact, 207,750. Now, the claims, which are a proxy for layoffs, have remained low in the face of high interest rates and elevated inflation. In an effort to stomp out the four-decade high inflation that took hold after that strong economic rebound from the pandemic recession in 2020, the Fed's raised its benchmark rate 11 times since March of 2022. Well, it's left rates alone at its last three meetings and has signaled that it would cut rates 3 times this year, but presumably later in the year rather than earlier. Now, as the Fed rapidly jacked up rates, most analysts thought that the U.S. economy as a whole would be sliding into a recession last year. But the economy and job market has remained surprisingly stubborn, some say resilient, with the headline unemployment rate staying below 4% for 22 straight months. It's the longest such streak since the 1960s. Well, a combination of decelerating inflation and low unemployment has raised hopes that the Fed's managing that soft landing, as elusive as it's been, that is raising rates just enough to bring down prices without causing the big R. Overall, 1.83 million Americans were collecting jobless benefits during the week ending December 30th. That was a decrease of about 34,000 from the previous week, largely the result of seasonal employment trends. May have seen this. Security and Exchange Commission just approved the first ever batch of spot Bitcoin exchange traded funds to come out of the U.S. The agency gave the green light yesterday to sponsors of 10 ETFs, including BlackRock, Invesco, Fidelity, Grayscale, and ARK Invest. And that's paving the way for these funds to begin trading as soon as today or tomorrow. I believe some of them did open up trading today. The move was largely expected, although widely controversial. Even after a social media hacking snag the other day, a false statement saying the regulator had approved the Bitcoin ETF was actually published Tuesday on one of the SEC's social media accounts, which the agency later clarified had been compromised. The actual approval yesterday marked a massive step for cryptocurrency, particularly Bitcoin, as it will now give investors increased ways to gain exposure to the token, not just from holding it directly, which is very complicated, but via existing financial instruments that trade on a regulated stock exchange. What does it all mean exactly? Well, we'll find out as time goes on. An ETF, as we know, is an investment fund that tracks the performance of an underlying asset. It could be stocks, currencies, gold and silver, or in this case, Bitcoin. It's a way for investors to get exposure to the value of that underlying asset without directly owning it. ETFs trade on traditional stock exchanges, and their value should rise when the underlying asset increases in price or fall if it decreases. Now, as crypto investors look to assess what the market impact of a Bitcoin ETF might be, well, many are comparing this news to the green lighting of the Spider Gold Shares ETF, the first ever spot gold ETF back in 2004. Hard to believe that was 20 years ago now. The total gold market capitalization was worth about $1 to $2 trillion before the gold ETF was approved back then. It subsequently ballooned to $16 trillion just a few years later. That's actually been a mixed blessing for investors of physical gold and silver, which we at Discount Gold and Silver Trading sell. But that's mostly another story for another time. Analysts, people who follow this, say that Bitcoin's adoption will be much faster and bigger than gold's was. This one guy said the story for Bitcoin and crypto will accelerate now, as the approval of a spot Bitcoin ETF could spark interest from retail investors who were previously sitting on the sidelines. Now, I'll talk about what a Bitcoin ETF might mean for markets and investors in today's third segment. And average long-term mortgage rates rising for the second time in as many weeks, climbing to its highest level in a month. The average rate in a 30-year mortgage rose to 6.66% from 6.62 last week. It's according to mortgage buyer Freddie Mac. A year ago, the rate averaged 6.33. Borrowing costs on a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage, popular with homeowners who are refinancing their home loans, eased this week, bringing the average rate down to 5.87% from 5.89 a week earlier. A year ago, it averaged 5.52, according to Freddie Mac. Now, the latest increase in the average 30-year rate follows a nine-week string of declines at the end of last year that lowered the average rate after it surged in late October and was as high as 8%, the highest since late 2000. Hey, I hear that music already. Better stick around. We'll be back after these few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away. I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is another day to find you. Shy it away. I'm coming for your love again.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. Discount Gold and Silver Trading is our sponsor, and I'm Dave Allen. Again, for all your precious metal needs, call Melody at 1-800-375-4188. And don't forget to check out our website, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog edited by yours truly. Again, dgscoins, one word, .com. Hey, it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's off-subject topic is, well, the joy of free time. Now, we all want to succeed in our pursuits, right? But more experts are saying we can grow and learn a great deal when we do things we're bad at, just for the joy of it. A lot to be said about that. Last 2 years gave many of us time to experiment. In fact, 59% of Americans say they picked up a new hobby during the pandemic. It's according to an article in The Atlantic magazine. Here are some of the new things Americans have been trying and what they've told groups like The Atlantic and Axios that they've learned. I think we can all take lessons from their experiences. First, it's never too late. One 60-year-old man from Arizona said, 3 years ago, I started piano lessons. My 9-year-old son started at the same time I did, and he's so much better than I am. And I love how learning a musical instrument is both mentally and physically challenged. Another woman from Georgia said, I took up tap dancing in my late 50s and have stuck with it for 7 years. I'm not great at it, and I'm the oldest person in my class, but it is fun. Jermaine from California notes, in my 70s, I am, and I just bought a violin. I've never played one before. My goal, to accompany a soloist singing Ave Maria in church. Wow, that's a grand ambition. Good luck with that, Jermaine. 54-year-old Susan from Denver tells us, I've been learning to speak Korean for a year now. It's not easy. I have to work very hard to immerse myself in all aspects of the language and culture, but it sure is fun. Now, second, find joy in sports. Kate from Illinois says, my husband's an excellent ultimate frisbee player. He convinced me to try it out, and I got hooked. The practice of continuing to work at something I was terrible at was zen-like. It was also humbling and a great antidote to my perfectionist tendencies. 43-year-old Doug in Bethesda, Maryland said, I joined an adult swim class at my community pool. First 15 minutes repeatedly punished my ego, but after the full hour, I feel so accomplished for doing something so hard. And third, find joy in art. Kelby from Texas, Austin, I believe, notes, I just picked up guitar lessons. I'm enjoying the challenge of learning something new and the concentration it requires, forcing me to clear my head and just focus on what I'm playing. Good point to stay in the here and now. And fourth, simply escape from work, whatever you do for a living. There's Wall Streeter Alex from New York says, for almost 35 years, I've been a volunteer firefighter. In no other part of my life do I enjoy the rich and stimulating diversity where the backgrounds, where those backgrounds come together in a selfless unity of purpose, helping others in their times of greatest need. Good for you, Alex. And Jordan from Kansas said, I have embraced learning how to repair and refurbish a motorcycle, in large part because it's so very different from what I do with most of my day working as a higher education administrator. Well, anecdotes like these go to show that just like a dog, we can learn new tricks at almost any age. And have joy from it. That's this week's Levity is Golden. Excuse me. Well, in more serious news, it looks like the federal budget deficit is on track to surpass $2 trillion this fiscal year, just as we had warned you about based on CBO projections. The federal government ran up another half a trillion dollars in red ink in the first quarter of its fiscal year 2024. The Treasury Department reported today, from October through December 2023, the budget deficit totaled just shy of $510 billion. Gosh, it seems not just so long ago that was the full annual deficit. That followed a shortfall of $129.4 billion in just December alone, which was over 50% higher than a year ago. The jump in the deficit pushed total gross government debt past $34 trillion for the first time. Debt held by the public now is over $27 trillion. Compared to last year, which saw a final deficit of $1.7 trillion, 24 is running a tad hotter. In the first quarter of fiscal 2023, for example, the difference between spending and receipts was just $421 billion. I say just compared to this year. That's an increase of $89 billion between last year and this. Now, adjusted for calendar factors, the Treasury Department said the change between the 2 years is actually $97 billion, but we won't go into that. December shortfall was higher by more than $34 billion compared to the previous year, driven higher largely by higher Social Security payments and net interest costs on the debt. The deficit has continued to pile up despite government assurances that, well, The White House's Inflation Reduction Act, in addition to reducing prices, would shave hundreds of billions of dollars off the deficit. Well, that remains to be seen. While the rate of inflation has come down from last year's 9.1% peak, Labor Department data today again showed the CPI increasing another 0.3 in December, and that pushed the annual rate up again to 3.4%. With interest rates elevated as the Fed fights inflation, financing costs for the government in 2023 were just about $660 billion. That's, again, total net interest payments on the national debt. Gross debt as a percentage of GDP rose to 120% as of the end of fiscal year 2023. More on rental costs. Again, it should come as no surprise to regular listeners that renters are among the most likely to describe their current financial situation as poor, while homeowners have a rosier outlook. That's according to the latest Axios Vibe survey by the Harris Poll. Americans who rent their home have been through the ringer over the past few years, dealing with double-digit rent increases in most cases, while soaring home prices and mortgage rates pushed homeownership increasingly out of reach for especially younger and people and first-time homebuyers. According to the survey, 57% of renters in our poll described their current financial situation as poor, compared with just 29% of homeowners. Homeowners, in fact, are nearly twice as likely to say they're getting ahead financially compared to renters. Now, nearly half of all renters, 46%, said they didn't have the money at the time a bill was due over the past month, compared to just 29% of homeowners. Median asking rent in the U.S. is up 40% from the first quarter of 2020. That is right before the pandemic started. That's according to the latest census data from the third quarter of last year. In some regions, increases were actually higher than that. And wages did not keep up initially. Average hourly earnings rose 20% from February 2020 to December 2023, according to the government. That's half of the rise in rent. In 2022, Melody and I talked about how Americans crossed the rent burden threshold, meaning the share of a typical household income needed to rent the average priced apartment. That went above 30%. 30% of income. Last year, as income growth picked up and rent increases slowed, things improved, but only by a smidge, leaving renters still pretty doggone burdened. On the flip side, again, homeowners a tad different. Value of their homes soared, while their monthly mortgage payments mostly did not, unless they refinanced or bought a new home. The average rate on all of the existing mortgages Americans hold right now is still just 3.5%. That's according to Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi. That's about half the going rate for a new mortgage today, as we I mentioned in the first segment. The upshot, according to another Moody's economist, Liu Chen, renters have a very thin financial buffer, while homeowners largely continue to build their wealth. Now, the rent versus own dynamics markedly different from what happened after the 2008 Great Recession. Back then, rents held fairly steady, while home prices actually took a nosedive, putting a lot of mortgage holders underwater on their loans, that is, owing more to the bank than their house was worth, and thus in precarious financial shape. But it was a decent time to buy a house for renters. The government even gave first-time buyers a $7,500 tax credit for the down payment. In 2010, coming out of the financial crisis, homeowners made up 54% of individual Chapter 7 bankruptcy filings, according to the American Bankruptcy Institute. But fast forward to 2023, when the ABI says homeowners were just 23% of bankruptcies, even though they made up 66% of the population. Still, the share of U.S. homes in foreclosure ticked up a bit last year, but it's still lower than it was before the pandemic. Now, because of pandemic-era support, foreclosure rates plummeted in 20 and 21, historically low unemployment rates and soaring home prices helped keep them low. There just aren't many distressed homeowners out there right now who can't find a buyer for their house, and very few U.S. homes have underwater mortgages, according to Freddie Mac. In 2023, foreclosures were up 10% from that low 2022 baseline. The share of U.S. homes in some state of foreclosure was actually less than 0.25% last year. Bottom line, Adam CEO Rob Barber says, we see the recent rise in foreclosure activity as a market correction rather than a cause for alarm. Well, still an industry in recession. We shall see as the year rolls on. Some good news in a broader societal sense, I believe. About 20 million people signed up for health insurance this year. That through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces. It's a record-breaking figure, in fact. Biden almost certainly will tout those results on the campaign trail in the coming months, especially as former President Trump, the Republican frontrunner, vows to dismantle the program if elected. In any event, the latest enrollment projections mean a quarter more Americans have signed up for coverage this year than last. That was another record-breaking year when over 16 million Americans enrolled in the program. Signups spiked after Biden took office. The Democrats rolled out a series of tax breaks that gave millions of Americans access to lower cost plans in the ACA, some with even $0 premiums in some of the HMOs and higher deductible plans. Nation's top health official credited increased interest in the coverage with an aggressive PR campaign to get people enrolled. The administration has worked with nonprofits across the country, including in predominantly Black and Latino communities like South Florida, to get new people into coverage. The administration also reportedly has invested millions more dollars into hiring navigators who help people enroll who can't do it themselves. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra says, we're not waiting for them to come to us. We're going to them. But, I mean, the increased enrollment news that the administration's celebrating hasn't come without a cost. I mean, some of the millions of new enrollees have only turned to the marketplace because they've been booted off Medicaid in their states, the virtually free health care coverage offered to the poorest Americans and to those with disabilities. The health plans they purchase through the marketplace will have higher premiums and co-pays for most services, including prescription drugs. About 14.5 million Americans have been recently kicked off Medicaid after the government lifted a three-year ban that barred states from removing ineligible people from the government-sponsored health insurance. And some states began purging millions of people from Medicaid last year during an error-plagued process that left thousands of children, and pregnant women in particular, erroneously without health insurance coverage for some period of time. Now, although open enrollment for health insurance plans purchased through the Affordable Care Act marketplace ends, does it end? The 16th, next week, people who've been removed from Medicaid could be eligible to enroll through the end of July. Excuse me. And last, this segment. primary theme of the U.S. economy over the last year and a half has been, as we know, that inflation has come down as unemployment has stayed relatively low. Well, the unemployment depends on how you measure it. In any event, it's not just a U.S. story. The unemployment rate in the Eurozone fell to 6.4%, matching their all-time low, coincided with inflation of only 2.5% for the 12 months ending that month. Hey, I think I hear the music again. That means we're up for another break. I hope you stick around for one more segment. You're listening to Financial Survival.
It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, the show that brings you the hard truths we face together day in and day out. I'm Dave Allen. You know where to reach us. 1-800-375-4188. Now, we talked in today's first segment about the SEC's approval yesterday of the Bitcoin ETF. Among other things, a Bitcoin ETF opens up the pool of people and institutions that can buy and sell Bitcoin to those with little or no experience trading cryptocurrencies. Kevin DePaddle, who's co-founder and CEO of crypto liquidity provider KeyRock, told CNBC this morning, quote, "This ETF has two main impacts, increased distribution of Bitcoin in the U.S., which actually is a moderate impact if there, as there have been ETFs outside the U.S. for years, and increased credibility of crypto as an asset class." That's probably a much higher impact, particularly in the short term. DePaul added, there is now a Bitcoin spot ETF, and Bitcoin will no longer be considered shady or infamous. This significantly changes the perception for the mainstream public. I got to tell you, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think time is going to have to tell. I think a lot of that will depend or at least be measured by the amount of investments that grow in this ETF over the course of time. But it also could mean that Bitcoin should start appearing in mainstream investment and retirement portfolios, for better or for worse, where more retail investors can gain exposure. Big institutional fund managers can add it to their investment funds. Retirement planners can include it in employee-sponsored 401k plans. In short, the SEC's approval makes it a lot easier to own Bitcoin, as you don't have to rely on a vulnerable piece of hardware for storage. You just won't own it physically. Investors won't need to tackle the difference between hot and cold wallets, which store digital tokens. Instead, they can now just buy an ETF from one of the many regulated asset managers that are set to go live with their own ETFs that we manage, that we mentioned in the first segment. Timo Lehes, co-founder of blockchain firm Swarm Markets, says the approval of this ETF has huge implications for U.S. investors because they can now hold crypto in their brokerage account, which they couldn't do before. We expect major inflows of capital into the market as a result. Well, a Bitcoin ETF could certainly bring cryptocurrency exposure to a more diverse set of holders and with different levels of size and experience in the market. Initially, I'm concerned that additional Bitcoin investment could put pressure on gold and silver, downward pressure on their prices, at least in the short run. A lot of gold analysts are tying today's fall in gold prices to today's CPI report showing inflation having risen a little. I wonder, however, if given finite levels of disposable income for savings, for whatever purpose, more demand for Bitcoin will result in less demand for gold and silver, thus putting downward pressure on their prices in the short run again. Joy Yang at Market Vector tells Kitco News that the approval of a Bitcoin ETF could keep prices near $2,000 to $2,100 through most of 2024 as the crypto becomes at least an initial alternative asset. Yet Yang doesn't expect gold prices to drop below $2,000. This year. She says there's enough market uncertainty and geopolitical risk that the gains gold made in 2023 will stay in 2024. Again, she expects gold to trade in a range of $2,000 to $2,100 through the end of this year before it takes off again. But aggressive Fed rate cuts, she added, could cause gold to shine despite Bitcoin's new shadow. So remember, ladies and gentlemen, even if Bitcoin does overshadow gold in the short term, the fundamentals of gold and silver, especially physical gold and silver, remain strong. For one thing, gold and silver, real money with inherent value. That's not the case with Bitcoin, especially as sold in an exchange-traded fund. For another thing, I ask you this. Aren't you the least bit worried, given Bitcoin's and other cryptocurrencies' mysterious and abstract nature, that more and more mainstream investors will become, well, complicit, in a sense, in the dark side of cryptos, like funding for terrorism, money laundering, and other shady acts? I know I am. Well, some positive news here, I believe. The Biden administration awarding $623 million in grants to help build an electrical vehicle charging network across the nation. White House officials said the grants announced today will fund 47 EV charging stations and related projects in 22 states and Puerto Rico, including 7,500 EV charging ports. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the new funding will help ensure that EV chargers are accessible, reliable, and convenient while creating jobs in charger manufacturing, installation, and maintenance for Americans. Congress approved over $7 billion in the 2021 infrastructure law to meet the president's goal of building out a national network of 500,000 publicly available EV chargers by 2030. The charging ports are a key part of Biden's effort to encourage drivers to move away from gas-powered cars and trucks. But progress on such a network has been slow. Ohio and New York are the only states that have opened charging stations under the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program thus far. Several other states, including Pennsylvania and Maine, have broken ground on federally funded projects and are now expected to open stations early this year. A total of 28 other states and Puerto Rico have either awarded contracts to build chargers or have accepted bids to do so. So I guess you could say progress in that area. Since Biden took office in 2021, EV sales have more than quadrupled and reached more than 1 million last year, although many of them being delivered later than originally promised. The number of publicly available charging ports has grown by nearly 70% to 168,400 plus, according to White House advisor Ali Zaidi. He noted that numbers about a third of the way to Biden's goal with 6 years remaining. He told reporters, we're on an accelerating trajectory to meet and exceed the president's goal to hit 500,000 chargers and build that nationwide backbone. Widespread availability of chargers is crucial to meet another administration goal, that is ensuring that EVs make up half of all new car sales by 2030. That is, I don't know if it's a pipe dream, but it's certainly a challenging one. Along with cost, range anxiety reigns supreme. Range anxiety is about a lack of available charging station. That's a key impediment to Americans buying an EV. About 80% of survey respondents cited the concern about a lack of charging stations as a major reason they're not buying an EV right now. 7 in 10 respondents say they won't buy an EV because they take too long to charge and the battery technology isn't ready. Buttigieg brushed aside those concerns and said the future of auto travel is electric. He noted that EV sales now represent about 9% of all passenger vehicle sales, a major increase since they came into power in 2021. He cited a new study showing that EVs cost just 4% more than gas-powered cars. I haven't seen that study and don't know if how valid that 4% figure may or may not be. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is an election year. So the spinning and propaganda campaigns are ramping up on all ends. Stay tuned. I look at it this way. If you drive a gas-powered vehicle, don't fret. Regardless how you feel about things like climate change and whatever, other things being equal, the more EVs that are on the road, the less demand for gasoline and oil. And that should put some downward pressure on prices at the pump. A good thing, wouldn't you say? Well, a group of extremist House Republicans, again, sabotaging their own party. Yesterday in a protest of the spending deal worked out between their latest speaker, Mike Johnson, and Senate Democrats. The move marks a return to the hardball tactics that hardliners used under former Speaker Kevin McCarthy to retaliate against bipartisan deals before they ultimately removed him from the speakership a few months later. It's also a reminder of the easily combustible situation created by the House Republicans' effective two-vote majority. A dozen Republicans, mostly members of the House Freedom Caucus, joined Democrats in voting against a rule that almost always passes along party lines. The move effectively grounds House business to a halt until Johnson can reach a deal with the hardliners. The vote left establishment Republicans and Johnson allies literally stunned. One of them, Congressman Steve Womack of Arkansas, said, "I have no ability to come up with the words to describe where we are." Well, the question now is whether the latest revolt leads to something more, as some hardliners begin to offer faint signals of a possible effort to remove Johnson and look for yet another speaker since they came to power last year. But one thing's for sure, with elections for president, senators, and House members coming in November, I expect the Republican mantra will be don't do anything. And that includes dealing with our top issues, our southern border crisis, the national debt, et cetera, anything that could potentially help Joe Biden and congressional Democrats. It's crazy out there, ladies and gentlemen. And finally today, some observers say that corporate pensions are starting to look like a viable option for employers to give to their workers again. But it looks like companies aren't ready just yet to rewind the clock. I don't think they ever will be again. With one in two Americans feeling like they aren't able to save for retirement, the steady and predictable income from defined benefit pension plans could certainly be a welcomed addition to their lives. The spike in interest rates and bond yields over the past year and a half has rewired the calculus for existing defined benefit plans. It's making their future liabilities look smaller and thus reducing the amount of money that employers are legally required to put into them to keep them whole. One pension expert, Anthony Randazzo, says we're in this snapshot in time where corporate pension plans actually look as good as they probably will at any point in the near future. 100 largest U.S. corporate pension plans now have more money than they need to meet their retirement obligation. That's according to new estimates released by actuarial firm Milliman. According to Milliman, those plans ended 2023 with 102% of the funds they need or they will need to pay their pensioners over time, having gained $15 billion on the year as the stock market surged. But the improving health of corporate pension plans doesn't mean that companies will actually start offering them again. On Monday, 3M announced just the opposite. It will freeze its U.S. pension plans for, non-union employees at the end of 2028. Future workers will then be shifted to 401k plans, defined contribution plans, as part of a long-running 3M strategy to move away from defined benefit plans. At the same time, the United Auto Workers tried to get General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis to return to traditional pensions when the union carried out the longest auto strike in half a century last year. All the automakers refused, but UAW President Sean Fain suggested that he'll push for pension defined benefit plans again when the new contracts expire again in 2028. Companies have been ditching defined benefit plans for decades, many of them shifting instead to defined contribution plans, again, like 401ks, Roth IRAs, et cetera, that require workers to kick in a percentage of their checks, some of which is matched by those employers. In 1970, about 45% of U.S. private workers had a pension. By 2022, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says that was down to just 11%, while 48% had defined contribution plans. Wall Street Journal reporter said that with many companies struggling to hire and keep workers, defined benefit pensions could become a powerful tool for pension. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out another week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks always to our production engineer extraordinaire Todd Waite and to you for turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.